Is it the Cheshire Cat, or is it Mike Petke after blowing out LA Galaxy 6-2? It's That's So MLS! With me, Nick Thornton, and with me, as always, is Andrew Bates.
Hello, Nick.
How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing great. This is a North American soccer podcast that you can find at That's So MLS.com.
It's a hard name to say.
I have been in Toronto. I've now returned. I got a chance to sit with some friends, including Ricardo Bordelon, who's been a guest on this podcast.
Great guest.
Got to sit around the couch and watch some Whitecaps. So it was a nice time.
Nice.
Well, welcome and it was back. A good game too.
You missed it. Well, you didn't miss, but it was a busy week. Considering, I think last time we both maybe didn't do our best at our homework because some results were kind of not super interesting. Boy, did MLS pull an all-out MLS weekend and just go buck wild with the results.
Well, there was so much there. The only thing you could really predict was TFC losing again. Wait. But yeah, I was watching the Whitecaps game and I saw they popped up on the thing that like RSL 6 LA 2 and I'm like, I had to clean my glasses like, sorry, what? What is this? What are you saying happened?
Yeah. I saw the result while other stuff was going on. Particularly in Vancouver, and it didn't quite register in my brain that it had happened. And then earlier this week, when I was going back and watching games, I was like, okay, I need to settle in and figure out just how this happened, because surely there was like three sendings off or something like that. And no, it was just the RSL that we've talked about this season being exceptionally good in transition play and having bright spots. This was them playing at their best, admittedly also playing against LA playing their worst game. Yeah. And what was so satisfying about this, admittedly, was for all the talk of Ibrahimovic and him being on the field for the entire game, he was not able to spark his team. And
no.
For years, people have criticized LA Galaxy for only signing stars and not actually building a proper team. Which I think has been unfair at points, but this season I feel like it's exceptionally fair to say there's just no chemistry there. There's no team play. And it was all too easy for RSL. But also, when was the last time RSL pounced on a team like this and just looked completely lethal? Like, they just tore them open. There wasn't a single goal here that looked like LA had a chance of saving. And also reminded me that I was like, LA Galaxy, they've got a pretty good goalkeeper in Tyler Miller. And then I remembered he's LAFC's goalkeeper. LA Galaxy got nothing between the sticks. It's a major point of weakness. They don't have proper center backs, and their best defender is aging out of the system, shall we say.
Well, you've said this about...
Who had some good plays, actually.
We've said this about both LA teams. But, like, ever since... it's been especially true of the Galaxy ever since Ibrahimovic arrived, that as good as you are offensively, if your defensive strategy is the shrug emoji, you're not going to be able to win games. And like not just like not necessarily having the right talent or not having the right rhythm. There have been multiple games this season where it's felt like the Galaxy defense has been a non-factor.
Yeah.
But either through, a lot of prodigious output on part of the offense. So even a 4-3 loss, you could say, well, I guess they scored three goals. But, like, it's been like that all season. And it turns out you can't just, show up to soccer with no defense.
It turns out. And this is the thing as well, is that we've talked about it so many times, but LA has not invested in proper center defensive mids. So it's not just a lack of a back line. It's a lack of... You build up these star players, and you know things are going wrong when Ibrahimovic is actually coming back to defend. Which, yeah. Even then, he didn't do much of, but credit to him, he at least somewhat tried. But you build a team around players that aren't willing to compete at both ends. This is the kind of thing that can happen. And, of course, it's a little fun to lay into everybody's favorite LA Galaxy at this point in the season. But this is real, real trouble for them. And it's so bizarre to me that they're so far up in the standings, and just shows how lucky they've been at points and how brilliant they've been at points. But this really casts them in a pretty precarious light that you've got to think there's teams chomping away behind them that could easily unseat them. Lack of concentration, lack of effort, but also just lack of skill. Like, the team looks set up in just completely an inharmonious way to the way the league works at this point.
First of all, what are they doing? what are they doing with playing a three back? Because I feel like if you're having issues defensively, the last thing that you want is to be be really relying on player's skill. I feel like a three back is something where you really have to rely on players to be able to cover space and be able to cycle the ball up. And one of the things that struck me is just how undeservedly chill is what I wrote in my notes about the LA defense. There's this I can't remember which goal it is. I think it's the one right after the own goal. Where the defense is being caught on the counterattack and it's collapsing back 3-on-3. Mm-hmm. So they're no longer being broke back on, so they're no longer outnumbered, but they're still not organized. Two of the central defender and one of the I believe the left back are pinned together, and one of the right most defender is a little bit sort of out of the way. And the midfielders just hang back. The midfielders make this decision like, oh, they've got this. When they clearly don't got this.
No, it's atrocious. This is the kind of game where you got to think you got to bench half the team in the next game for just lack of effort. Oh. The fact that they scored two goals just shows how open RSL was able to be. Because every goal looked easy in this game. All eight goals looked like just mere tap-ins. Against a team that's high-flying like this, it makes some sense. The thing that doesn't make sense is LA gets the first goal in this game and looks like they're cruising. And rather than dig in and find a way to get another goal and get the points, they just completely fall apart. And it's no... Don't get me wrong. Of course, it's a great play by RSL to come back and get as many goals as they do and win the game. But they don't look like a team that's switched even into, like, third gear. Like, it looks like a practice game that they're just knocking the ball around, and then they're able to run into so much space. It's absurd. It's
so much of it. And he's obviously not the one that got the most goals, but Albert Rusnak had a career night, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about all the attention that MSL players have had this year, MLS, I know what the league is called.
The Major Soccer League.
The Major Soccer League. Well, we'll get to funny names in a minute. Of course, Rusnak has had a lot of attention. Krylock as well in this game just tore things up. I believe he got his hat trick on the night. And I love to see it. I love to see MLS players that don't get a ton of attention, domestic players that just come in and tear things up, especially against a team that's full of big names and big salaries. That really, they were all on the pitch, but they couldn't seem to do anything.
That's a great point. There was no, like, largely there was no missing element. I mean, Alessandrini didn't start, but he played. Yeah. You know, there was nothing that they missed where you could be like, oh, well, they were missing whoever. You can't even like say, oh, well, the Dos Santos brothers aren't playing well. Because for some reason, Jonathan Dos Santos pops up to score like his first goal in a million years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the crazy thing is that I think even before the match, LA Galaxy was like, oh, right, we're back at full strength. We've got everyone back. What could possibly go wrong? Not knowing how to play the game of football, apparently.
The for some reason, whenever I hear Krylock's name, I think not just of the Aqua Teen Hunger Force character Frylock, but the the MF Doom song about the Aqua Teen Hunger Force, where that's rhymed with his name rhymes with Mike Hawk. Krylock's name also rhymes with Mike Hawk.
I don't know how to help you there. Do I have to bleep that out?
It's all. This is all above board, as great. Is Krylock, but it's very good. And like everybody, like I'm interested to say it because it's like you look at you. It's. I think that if you were to critique RSL, I didn't see the game, so I can't necessarily say that I was able to see it top to bottom. But it seemed from the highlights that they were pretty focused offensively, although that could have just been Albert Rusnak. You can't just say though that it was only Albert Rusnak because you had a player that wasn't him get a hat trick.
Yeah, no, I think they played exceptionally well. This was as good of a game as they've had all season. And not just because of the result, but of the way they played together and finished out a game. And I know that's something that Mike Petke's been at his players about, is being able to see out a game. They've had good spells of possession. They've had good runs of play. They've scored goals this season. And I think they've been frustrated by the amount of goals they've scored against the number of goals they've conceded. But now they're sitting in fourth. You know, it's the Western Conference. There's not a lot of room to spare there. Mm-hmm. But they really sort of announced things in this one. And for RSL is not a team that you would just, on the surface of it, be like, oh, yeah, they've had a good season. You know, they're sitting 1 point behind SKC and 2 points behind LAFC.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of the teams above them have at times bled crucial points. So I think they've put themselves in a really fine position, and this result is more than just LA having a bad night. But there was a number of teams that had a number of bad nights and some big upsets this week. What did you think of the Montreal-New York Red Bulls result?
That was a very interesting one. I think that I was surprised by the Red Bulls, but I wasn't particularly surprised by Montreal, because I feel like this is a style of play that Montreal has really refined this season, where they've got Tider has an assist on a goal. There's some Tider is everywhere. Late in the game, Piatti banks one in to have an insurance goal. They have Piatti scores and then has his goal disallowed.
Yeah.
And then they score again just to make sure that it happens. The first goal, whatever the name of the center back is, he really owes the one that scored. He really owes Saffer Tider dinner because...
Oh, Rod
Finney? Wow, he set him up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Tider set him up. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so bizarre how... As much as the game of soccer is not about just being in form, it's about being in form at times.
Yeah.
The one noticeable absence here for New York Red Bulls was Tyler Adams, who's fine but played 180 minutes in that week already, and then also was called up to the U.S. men's national team. And I felt like the Red Bulls definitely missed him But this, just from start to finish, looked like a very dominant Montreal performance, and one we've seen them complete before against Eastern Conference teams.
The other thing that I'm not seeing here, and he wasn't, he's not listed as absent for any reason, so I'm not sure why he didn't play, is why Kaku didn't start. Do you think they were coming into Montreal with a little bit of a defensive look? Because I don't know that he was even on the bench.
I believe there has been some interest from a Spanish club in him, and I haven't read any recent reports, but I think that might have something to do with it.
If he gets signed away, because it's funny, because at the beginning of the season, they looked great without him, and it was like, how is he going to integrate? And it's not like he's the only great player on the side, or he's not like they completely rely on him. No. But he's a great alternative to Bradley Wright Phillips, and he creates a lot on his own. What makes him such a dynamic force is when you have so many different players creating in different areas of the park. Between this and the head coach switch, it's like New York Red Bulls could be a contender that burned themselves out, not through losing form, but being too good at the beginning of the season that all their people got signed before the end.
Oh, wait, no, so he did start in this game.
Oh, is he just written down differently? Is he like Romeo Gamara or something?
No, he's there.
Oh, maybe, no. I'm not pulling a weird trick where I'm looking at the wrong player again. Is it, or is it?
It's possible, but also, I mean, that says something about the way that he played and how the team showed up for him.
Yeah, that is fair. Oh, it's possible. Yeah, it looks like, I think they've listed him weirdly as
That's possible.
Under a non-Kaku name, or at least perhaps I'm looking at the wrong thing. Anyways, yeah, it's a tough performance. New York has had a look of these performances sometimes where once they turn it on, it's hard to stop them. It's hard to find a way to contain them. But if you can stop them from ever getting going, you have a real chance.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, BWP had barely any shout at the ball all night, and it's interesting to watch a team that's struggled so much play so well against a team that's done so well. But you know, when they can understand foes that they faced before and understand the tactics of what they need to do, and it shut down key players and keep them quiet and play the game that they're good at and pull off a pretty impressive result. And this wasn't a 3-0 blowout. This was something that happened kind of over the course of the game. But really, there was never much in it for New York Red Bulls over the 90 minutes. And that's got to be a little concerning heading into the playoffs.
Looking at the players that were, like, looking at the fact that they also sat Tim Parker.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you have to feel like maybe there was just a little bit of, exhaustion.
Exhaustion, but I also think a bit of complacency. I think this is probably one they felt like they could win easily or at least get a point out of without some key players, knowing that the international break was coming up and obviously gambled wrong. And at the same time, it should be noted that they are the only team in the league to have clinched a playoff spot. So they really didn't need points here. And this could perhaps be a little bit of tinkering with the squad to see what they could do without key players. It didn't pan out. It makes no difference whatsoever. They remain at the top of the league, and they remain the only team to have clinched a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, indeed, Kaku is listed on some forms as Alejandro Romero Gamara. I did not know that. Now you say that. What result was it exactly that that confirmed them that positioning?
I think that I don't know actually.
I know. Sorry, I saw it in a tweet, so I wasn't.
All right,
sure.
Statistician, lay it on me. I have ideas, but I don't actually know.
I had heard that it was Columbus defeating New York City at home.
Oh, that would do it.
Yeah, it was Columbus, despite the fact that they've had an up and down year, but have remained in a nice place in the standings, and they were able to at home earn a valuable win over New York City.
Yeah, huge result for them.
2-1.
And
they kind of.
People have been talking about the New York City skid a little bit, mm-hmm. and certainly they've not had a good run of games. But this one, to me, was also just a big re-announcement of Columbus to be the team that you just never can count out. And also notable that Justin Merrim, who has just returned, gets the game-winning goal as if he's never left. Slots in like he's, you know, for the last 6-8 months, he's just stayed in Columbus, and it's interesting sometimes how the league works, and you can spend some time away and have a completely unsuccessful spout at another team, and then come back and it's like nothing's changed. Tajuri Shradi still for me is as good of a player as Maxi Morales or anybody on NYCFC, and is at times single-handedly keeping the team afloat, but it's just not quite enough. A full has made the difference many times for Columbus, but
oh man,
it's just so satisfying to see Justin Merrim come back into this team like he's never left.
Now, Merrim's goal is important, but I am going to give the requisite props to Affle, who so New York City, nothing happened in the first half. New York City comes ahead by sort of doing another, you know, being able to sneak behind the Columbus defensive line. And then Harrison Affle hits this beautiful, beautiful shot. And this was the first highlight package that I watched, and I was like, that's my goal of the week. And then I saw like 6 other amazing goals.
I think I saw this one and I missed it, so I'm coming back to it.
But the so basically, he takes like a.
Sorry, I just saw it come off a player's bum.
He takes a short shot that is a butt deflection, as discussed. The ball takes a butt deflection and it falls to him. He has got so much room to make that volley.
He really, really does. There's no. Oh my god. There's literally fully 3 players just standing with their feet wide apart watching him.
Yeah, and I think that, and I'm just checking my notes to make sure this is the one I'm thinking of. This is not the only time this has happened, but it's like a player spends so much time, like a player is like thinking, oh, well, I'm marking other people, so I don't want to be pulled opposition by this thing. But the movement is so obvious. It's so clear what he's doing. He's not. Like, if you break from your man to try and go pressure this guy, he's not going to be able to, you know, change his movement and play a ball off the carpet onto somebody else. He's winding up a huge shot.
Yeah, he's only ever going to take that. And who's the player closest to him watching? Captain David Villa.
Can have
all the experience in the game, but sometimes the best players get bit. Not saying David Villa is not a complete wizard genius, but just proving sometimes you're out of position and you make the wrong decision.
I feel like with so little happening before this, to get a goal that is less than 10 minutes after New York City's opener really helps reestablish the momentum and make it feel like, you know, getting back into the game is possible, which they then put their stamp on 2 minutes later with Merrim's goal.
Yeah. Agreed.
And not to take anything away from him from saying that, because it is great, you know, it's great to see him play like that. And the one thing that I was also really excited about for Columbus from seeing this, now that Merrim is back in a big way, is the interplay between him and Zardes. Because Kamara was there too. It's not like when Merrim was there the first time, he didn't also have another strong attacking player to sort of play against, but to play off. But like, I think that Zardes is like such an explosive player that it's going to create chaos that really benefits Merrim as well. I hope that would be the case. Would you agree, or do you think they're going to suck each other's oxygen up?
No, I think that the way that they're set up this season, I think it's going to work really, really well for them. And Columbus has been getting results, so I don't want to say that they've been missing Merrim. However, there's a team chemistry thing that just can't be bought sometimes. And Zardes has proven that he can just slot in there like a dream. Sort of.
Yep.
And, and having a player like Merrim back in the lineup to help support that just shows how much it means to be able to be flexible with players slotting in key places. But Kamara never quite fit.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there was the clashes, the very public clashes with some key players as well, but just stylistically, it didn't ever quite make sense. And you have to imagine if you're in Merrim's position, you're not coming back in to compete against your teammates. You're coming back into a team that you know, that you care about, that you love. And Merrim made a call. He had a lot of respect for a Columbus crew, but wanted to move on to greener pastures and try something different. And let's face it, probably also wanted to move from a club that was in pretty dire straits and still is. And even fans were pretty respectful of that decision. But the fact that he's coming back, you know, he's only ever going to have the fans completely on his side for the rest of the season. He understands the way the team plays. And he's a veteran of the league, so he understands he's played against Zardes many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not surprised at all. I think it makes perfect sense. And I feel like this is sort of the dark horse thing, the move that the league is not going to talk about, but makes Columbus a pretty formidable foe moving ahead, and a team that's going to be really hard to beat over two legs. You can catch them on your day, but over two legs, Columbus can beat just about any team in the league.
No doubt. The other big upset that caught my attention, even more than the two New York games, was DC beating Atlanta. Because as much as we've talked about sort of DC reformatting itself as a stronger team that has, like, you know, a little bit more energy around it, Atlanta has been a juggernaut so far this season.
Yeah.
We've said that Atlanta could be beaten on any night, but this wasn't the night I was thinking.
It's true. I was baffled by this game, and then I watched it and I went, it kind of makes sense. It should be noted, who is the player that unlocked them?
Is that
Acosta?
Yeah.
Who used to play for? Oh wait, he's been with. No. I keep getting him and
the other Acosta.
Assad. I keep getting him and Assad mixed up.
Yes. That's right.
Sorry, Acosta. You're a different player. You're very good. You've been with the team for a number of years, and you've scored many, many goals, and you're great.
That first goal, I have in my notes, came from being able to pull aside the defense in order to create space to score, which is not hard with Atlanta.
No, and the teams that have lined up well against Atlanta, again, like, take our notes from earlier, they're not set up defensively all that well. And if you can find a way to quiet their key attacking players, which is possible, you can get a bit of luck and get some room. Also, it pains me to say a little bit, but also I love that this can happen later in my life, that I thought Wayne Rooney was the player of the week in this game. He was again absolutely gassed for much of the last 30 minutes, and yet just somehow was able to tap into a third, fourth gear and use his insight and ability in the game to just split the defense apart His goal was fantastic, but he was all over the place causing all kinds of problems. And I kind of like being able to say a Wayne Rooney against an Almiron any day, Rooney can still beat him. I love it.
That's crazy.
Why the hell not? It is crazy. It is crazy. And it shouldn't be right. And before this game, you would have said, there's no way Almiron will burn him. Didn't happen. I bet he had some pretty tired legs afterwards. But Rooney played like he's never played before in this game. I mean, well, not quite true. Some of those early days at Everton and Man United were pretty spectacular. But retirement league, what?
Rooney had one goal and two assists in the 3-1 win. So he had hand all three goals. I can't imagine from how gassed he looked that it must have been very fun for Darren Maddox to come in on the 85th minute of after it's already 3-1. But, you know, Rooney earned his keep in this, so there's little you can complain about with that.
He sure did. Also, my player of the week is going to Bill Hamid in this one. Bill Hamid made about 6 or 7 saves as well. So as good as Rooney and DC were, boy, were they kept in it by their goalkeeper in this match.
And, you know, Bill Hamid has been great ever since the Puerto Rico Islanders days of the A-League. Or not, yeah, the USL First Division. But I'm very sorry, David Osted. He's doing real well.
Sure. And, I mean, DC's been really strategic about the moves they've made for players this season, and Osted's recovering from injury. It's unlikely he's going to play for the rest of the season, so not that they knew that when they were bringing in Bill Hamid, but they now have.
True.
Sorry,
I didn't know about the injury.
Yeah, he just had surgery on his arm, I believe. So he's going to
be out.
Get
well soon.
Get well soon, David Osted. They have 3 great goalkeepers. I feel like DC has the best goalkeeper depth in the league right now. And especially with a key keeper like Osted out, to have 2 very serviceable backups. And if your backup is Bill Hamid, good God. Like, yeah. You're going to be all right heading into the playoff stretch. To me, this was another game that really put the nail in the coffin for Toronto FC.
I have 2 points about DC before we, you're talking about this game still.
Yeah. No, I mean that this result was a nail in the coffin for Toronto because I think DC is still just behind. They're above now by 3 points, which isn't a ton, but, you know, the odds are ever in their favor. And, I don't think this was luck. I really don't. I thought this was extremely skillful tactics laid out by the coach and was my team of the week and sort of overall game of the week until a later result happened. But we'll get to that.
Were you surprised that an Atlanta United player got carded for simulation and it wasn't Martinez?
I was amazed that any Atlanta player got carded for anything, quite frankly.
Eric Rometty was carded in what appeared to be earlier on, although I don't know what the exact minute of it was. The other point was there was a penalty kick, which seemed to me to be a little bit, it was one of those ones that's 50-50, but I guess if you think that the foot did make contact with the heel, that's how it goes, I guess.
Yeah, I remember that one. It looked a little suspicious, or not suspicious, but just a little soft. But it is kind of one of those ones that, you know, I saw it 6 or 7 times from different angles, and by the 7th time I was like, I have no idea. The first angle said yes, the second angle said no, the third angle said yes, the fourth angle said no, so I'm fine.
I'm blind now, what's a soccer ball?
So, yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, that TFC is traveling in the wrong direction in the standings, and their result did them no favors.
Sure didn't.
Losing 4-2 at home to LAFC.
Mm-hmm.
In a very LAFC-ian performance.
Yeah, leaving it real late. I didn't see much of this game. I watched the highlights for it. But it seemed to be LAFC doing what they do oh so well, and then them kind of crashing out for a little bit and not having any idea what to do. And as we've said many, many times, Toronto FC is basically the Jozy Altidore FC team, and he makes all the difference. And then it's a little bit too late, and Vela pulls one back. I don't have too much to say about this match other than... Toronto can feel good about the way that they've rallied to play a little better and play for each other, and show flashes of brilliance. But this is beginning to look a little bit like a Leicester season from last year, that they just ran away with it for numerous reasons, but they don't look like champions. And at this point, come on, how many weeks do we need to say it? They're not making the playoffs.
I feel like if there's anything that they're working towards, it's like, don't blow up the team, please.
Yes. Yeah. Which, right? Which, like, I think would be a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Altidore gets two and you're right. Like, I think that the issue with that Vela goal, is that, like, and it was an amazing effort in extra time that he scored to make it, 4-2, but you know, TFC, I think, stood, if they had scored a little bit earlier, perhaps, they stood a real chance of equalizing.
Yeah, and I agree. But also, how many times have we said that about a game that TFC has played this year?
Well,
that if they got into it sooner, more would have happened. And time's running out. And I don't want to just play the table game every week, but, you know, okay, they're technically only 9 points out of that last place. But every team above them is in form and picking up crucial points. And again, DC United, still games in hand, still winning massive games. And if DC can beat Atlanta, they sure as hell can beat Toronto.
I like Clint Irwin. I felt that the first goal, his goal against, looked pretty bad on him. As much as it's, you know, you got to make sure that there's some, you play your backup goalkeeper a little bit. I wonder how you were looking at even though it's a Western Conference team, I wonder how you're looking at a home game and thinking, this is fine.
Do you feel, was Bono injured or was it just a switch up?
He was on the bench.
Yeah. I feel like that's warranted. I don't feel like he's been good enough. And at a certain point, I feel like the coach has got to do something to light a fire under players. And Bono's looked lethargic. I mean, he's played an extraordinary number of games, but he hasn't been sharp. And I think sometimes you got to roll the dice and play your backup keeper and light a fire a little bit, even if it doesn't go your way.
I suppose that's true. By any, if I was to guess, was that result that you that changed your mind about Team of the Week, New York City, New England?
You know me so well. So earlier in the week, New England plays Portland, and I was very surprised they got a point out of that. In kind of a nothing game with not a lot to talk about. Not that both teams aren't doing well right now or capable of doing well, but I have no notes from that game, really. And yes, New York City's been a bit of a wounded animal, but we've talked about New England and their strengths, and they probably could have won this one with a little bit more, but the important thing is they won it at all. And this, to me, is the result that not only perhaps seals New York's, Toronto's fate, but perhaps seals New England's fate as staying in the playoffs, and that is just a team that you cannot predict. From week to week, I feel like it's flip a coin with this team. But there's not a team in this league that they can't give an honest showing to. And New York City played okay. And I thought New England played okay also. Mm-hmm. But this, to me, is my team of the week. Even with the New York City FC on a backslide, for months everybody's been glowing about how New York City is the best team in the league and they're so good and there's no way they can be upset and they're going to win the Shield and it's going to be their year. And it's not just that they've been losing games, it's that other teams have been figuring them out. And this, to me, was an example of a team figuring the other team out. But what do you think?
Well, the one word of caution that I would say about New England is that they're still not
good.
They can win. I mean, it's true that they can win any game, but they're not. They're still like I would feel a little bit more, you know, excited about this result if it had got them over the line, and they're still not over the line. They're behind Montreal by 3 points. They got a game in hand, so that's good. But this is true of Toronto FC, and this is also true of DC United, although they've looked impressive. There's just not a lot of spots left, especially as the Union continues to have a bunch of, you know, safe results that are keeping them reasonably afloat. There's 7 points between, if not the Impact, there's 7 points between New England and Philadelphia, and they've played the same number of games. So that puts as good, as great on the night, that is. New England really needs to develop a little more consistency if they are going to make something of the improvement in performance they've had since last year. Because it's definitely been better, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely been better, but if it's better and they miss the playoffs, you can't build Rome in a day, but still.
I feel like New England is firmly in Whitecaps territory. Like, they're the Whitecaps of the East. That on their night, they can perform and do well, and they show moments of brilliance, and they've got great players, but the pedigree maybe isn't just quite high enough to do it consistently. My note for this was a shout-out to our buddy Brad Knighton.
Yeah!
For making his start. Having
Whitecaps goalkeeper.
An excellent game, and also that... New England also hasn't won a game in more than 2 months.
Really? Is this the first? So they're back. Because they spent so much time at the beginning of the season being pretty good, so I am excited to see a pickup of performance from them.
Yeah, and they haven't lost a ton. They've lost some. Many, perhaps, even. But they're, you know, they're still in it. 3 points out of that final playoff spot behind Montreal Impact, vying with DC. This is where I go... without a miracle, Toronto's out. DC, yeah. New England, Montreal, Philadelphia are all fighting for their lives with Columbus. And New York City FC, even if they continue to slide, is still sitting pretty at the top of the table. So, yeah, it's getting interesting in the East. It feels weird to say that. But I've actually been watching the Eastern Conference table more than the West.
Well, it's kind of like... I feel like the top is getting a little bit solidified, so it's like we're getting to the sort of the season now where you can sort of tell, you know, which games are the spicy ones that are going to start, like, you know, start to dictate the pace heading forward. In the nice part is that between, you know, the contender jockeying at the top and the reasonable amount of interest among the middle five, there's only like one or two teams in the East that doesn't have a lot going on. Philadelphia drew to one of them. Disaster Club, Orlando City SC, 2-2. However, I didn't get to see the highlights of this one. It looks like Orlando rescued the point at home with a goal in injury time. You're going to need to see a little bit better than that from Philadelphia if they're going to retain their position. But at the same time, and I know why I was just saying they're pulling off these results. I didn't know that they sort of let that one slip away at the last minute. But I mean, they still get the point. So there's that, I guess.
Yeah, they're still hanging in there. I don't have too much to add to this game. I saw the highlights and didn't seem like a ton in it. And Orlando, I think, is making a last-ditch shout to just find some team chemistry, which I think is great. I love seeing a team that's willing to rally when they know they're not really in the mix, but they're going to make it difficult for the teams above. And that's what always makes MLS interesting.
You've identified Philadelphia as the Whitecaps of the East. Why don't we take a look at the Whitecaps of the West?
The Whitecaps?
who completed this series that they've just had with San Jose is interesting because they've won both the games, but it's like it because of the position the Earthquakes are in, you kind of expect them to win both the games, and the Earthquakes do their best. And we've identified this with Whitecaps in the past over the course of the season to sour the pudding.
Mm-hmm.
At the very end with a goal that almost sort of turns the momentum a little bit, but comes far too late for anything to happen. But if you are looking for positive news from the Whitecaps, it is a couple wins on the bounce, so that's positive.
It is positive. And the positive thing for me comes from the fact that it's well known amongst Whitecaps supporters that we show up well against good teams now. On the road against good teams, we could win or maybe get a point out of it. At home against a really bottom-of-the-barrel team, all bets are off. So I'm just glad that we won this one. I was a little bit distracted through this match because I had a bunch of first-time meatheads sitting behind me for the whole match who just kept chanting Giovinco. So I couldn't fully focus on the game and had to intervene a couple of times to just be like, hey, hi, I know it's your first time having beer, but anyway, they were lovely gentlemen in the end. Once I got real salty, they shut up a bit. But overall, I thought this was a good match for the Whitecaps. San Jose definitely looked like they were threatening at times, but there were still lots of moments of just Whitecaps blunders where, you know, this game could have been put to bed 4-5-0 and the finishing just wasn't there. But it was great to see the team effort. For me, the goal from this match was a great goal from Alfonso Davies in the 22nd minute to get things going. But the Mosquito goal, talk about not stepping up to a player. He takes that goal like a free kick. If you watch the highlights, like and I was there in real time, but I was like, he's setting this up like it's a free kick and then just stands there, stops the ball, boots it, curls it perfectly. There's no one near him. And I'm like, well, if you let a player take a shot like that, it was basically a free kick.
This is the goal that I wrote that note down about players sort of not being sure whether or not to commit. If you look at the defenders that
commit! Nobody was...
No, but what I mean, like not just commit, but the point about, you know, okay, so I have an assignment. I'm supposed to be marking this player. This player is here. So I shouldn't break position because if I try to rush the player and the player like plays through, there's going to be a hole in space because I tried to rush this player. So the defender is sitting roughly equidistant between Mosquito and the player that the defender is supposed to be marking and watches him set up this free kick.
Yeah. Bring down the ball with plenty of space, makes no attempt to close the space, and backs off as Mosquito backs up to stop the ball. Unbelievable. And credit to Vaco for getting a goal. I mean, it was definitely Vancouver falling asleep. And they didn't make this match easy for us. But as usual, the Whitecaps didn't make it easy for us. But that goal to me was just what symbolized everything that we've talked about for the last 4 months in terms of defending an MLS, of just... somebody step up and stick a leg out and at least make it difficult for him to know where he's going to be aiming the ball. But that's a free kick. You just gave a player a free kick from open play.
The possession looked like it was pretty even, 50-50. It kind of did feel, you know, teams would go back and forth. And it's weird to say this of a game that had presumably 16 and 11 shots, but it didn't feel like either team had too much offensive pressure. Except for, you know, the Whitecaps a little bit in the first half and in the Quakes at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I also want to mention that there was a couple of things that I think happened special in this match that maybe I'm biased, but I think did matter. Is first of all, Brett Levi's played a full 90 minutes. I think that was fantastic to see him do that, and it was a good defensive backline shape for the whole time. We saw Ali Ghazal and Russell Tybert working together, playing extremely well. And also, I was very fortunate to be a part of a collaboration between the Southsiders and the Curva Collective in a special celebration for Kai Kamara's birthday, in which they bought a ton of Sierra Leone jerseys with Kamara's name on them. And before the match, as they came out, we all stood with our backs showing Kamara's name and the number 10 and did the heart-shaped hands thing for Kamara and sung happy birthday to him. And... you know, I've seen a lot of things in soccer, and I've seen a lot of TIFOs, and I've been a part of a few, and seeing a player's genuine reaction to something, knowing that, you know, Kamara didn't score a goal, but I think had an excellent game, I think it mattered, and especially after the game, the whole team came up to the Curva Collective in the supporter section to watch Kai Kamara celebrate. And that said a lot, that there was a genuine spirit of the whole team being in it and just needing their fans to celebrate something. And that night was about Kamara for what he's done for us, but it was also about giving something back to a lot of players that have, you know, we've criticized, but they've fought bloody hard this season. And that was really nice to see that they were all in on it. They wanted to celebrate Kai Kamara, and they wanted to celebrate with the supporters on a hard-fought win, but also just wanted to be appreciated by their fans. And I think at this point in the season, that was really, really crucial. So a big credit to Curva Collective for putting that together.
Kamara fights so hard for the club, and you could see this in some of the early chances where he's just fighting so hard on his own, that especially as a first-year player. There's so much to be commended about the leadership role he's taken and how much he's put on the line for the club.
Yeah, and I'll go a step further as well to say that I don't think Alphonso Davies would be where he is this season without him.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
I think a trade to Europe would have happened. The magnitude of the trade and the development of him as a player I don't think would have happened without Kamara. So it's not really been talked about much beyond just sort of he's been a good role model, but it's night and day the difference that he brings. And he's just fun to have at the club. He's fantastic to the fans. He's great to have on the team. And now I also have a special edition Sierra Leone Kai Kamara jersey, which I'm happy about.
Oh, man, I'm jealous. Ah.
Yeah.
If you know anybody that's getting rid of theirs, let me
know. I might know a guy.
Well, I think so. Dallas beat Houston 4-2 in the last game of their Capitan series. Didn't see much of that.
No, neither did I.
You mentioned New England, Portland. Seattle beat New England 1-1 against Portland. Seattle beat Sporting KC 3-1. And I think that's it for the week. Sparse because the Nations League is next week. Sparse in terms of games, but there are a couple. Portland, Colorado, SKC, Orlando, NYFC, FC, DC United.
That's going to be the one I'm watching.
It'll be a banger, especially these days, and a great chance for NYCFC to get some results back. Some stuff I just wanted to talk about briefly. It's David Beckham's new Florida club is not going to be called FC Beckham's. It will be... Club Internacional de Football Miami.
Yeah.
Inter Miami that has yet another primary black crest. We're going to get some more silver jerseys, black and silver jerseys, black and pink jerseys. The Inter, you know, following in the footsteps of Sporting KC, Inter Miami feels a little sticks in my throat a little bit, but the crest looks interesting.
It does. I initially probably had the same reaction everyone did, where I was just like, what are you on about, you pretentious? Oh, geez. And then I was like, Pelicans. You know what? Considering everything that's happening right now, their reasoning especially for this was, Miami's an international city, a ton of people coming in from all over the place, and that's what makes the city great. I go, why the heck not?
That's fair.
And good for you, Miami. Is it going to be a thing that MLS fans and commentators have to wrap their head around for the next 3 or 4 years? Of course it is. And I'm very glad for that. Let's bring in more conversations about how football's international. And let's maybe up the quality of the commentatorship in North American sports.
Here's a question. Like,
Club International? What is happening?
Now, here's a question, actually. And they're Herons, not Pelicans. I said they were Pelicans. Do you want
I thought them, they were Flamingos at first.
Do you want them to be called Inter, like the Italian club, or Internacional, like the Brazilian club? And or am I thinking like the South American club?
I'm going to be real. I know enough about MLS. I feel that they are just going to be called Miami FC.
Hey!
Regardless of what they officially pick. Inter Miami? I don't know.
That's fair. Whitecaps made a signing. Player by the name of Marvin Imnes, who, despite having some Premier League experience with Blackburn and Swansea, was most recently in Turkey. I don't know much about him. It's a striker midfielder till the end of the season. Maybe, I guess, just some backup cover.
Yeah, I said earlier to you off the record, I feel like this is a Noza Igibor signing, where it's just a late-season signing to see us across the finish line, knowing that this is probably the nail in the coffin for Jordan Much, who didn't amount too much, unfortunately. And despite
very similar. When you think about it, it's very similar.
It is very similar, and despite the pun, I thought Jordan Much was great. The injury problems are plaguing him, and I have the utmost empathy for that. It sucks. Nobody wants to have that. When Jordan Much has been on the field, he's looked fantastic. And I think this is just a bit of reassurance. Even though I know Jordan Much is more of a holding mid as opposed to an attacker, Bernie Abini recently left for Saudi Arabia. Even though we weren't playing him a lot, this is a reassurance. The same as bringing in the gentleman we recently brought in as another center back, whose name I'm forgetting completely. But the Whitecaps are, I feel like, establishing a pattern where late in the season they're bringing in reinforcements to just shore up things in case we make the playoffs. But the contracts are very, very tenuous, and I'm excited about any new signing, but I feel like this is if he gets some playing time and earns his keep, then maybe. But this is probably a 4-month contract, and I don't expect we'll see him around next season. That's just my gut feeling.
Well, unless it goes well, I guess.
And if it goes well, oh my god, I'm ready for it to go well. If this is the replacement to Breck Shea, I'm so okay for it. I'm sorry, Breck Shea, I know you're my neighbor. I saw him recently. It's weird. I buy groceries in the same neighborhood. I've seen him. I've made eye contact with him numerous times. Breck Shea, I'm sorry, but yeah.
Interesting that you bring up Roberto Dominguez. We still have yet to see
Dominguez. Thank you.
Him.
Yes.
The last thing I wanted to talk about, something that kind of I feel like, you know, one of the first major big snags of the Canadian Premier League. So they're trying to get their eighth team, and there was word that the CSA was going to deny sanctioning to the Ottawa Fury, which currently plays in USL, deny their permission to continue playing in the American League so that they come over to the Canadian Premier League for 2019. This was then walked back with the idea that Ottawa is not interested in doing that. And is interested in maintaining in USL for the next year. I have complex feelings about this. a lot of Canadian Premier League loyalists are framing this as a huge betrayal. Like, oh, this decision will hurt Canada. Ottawa needs to be stopped. You know, they're picking the easy way out. They're making a selfish decision. And I just think as important as the Canadian Premier League project is, and it's very important to the men's national team, to making sure to the sport in the country, making sure that people have a team to watch somewhere reasonably near them, or a team to identify with somewhere reasonably near them. That's very important. But second division soccer and pro soccer in general is still so tenuous. And I feel like if you've got a long view back to the last Canadian league, it's like, I don't understand why, you know, we just lost Edmonton.
Yeah.
You know, like they're coming back, and they're coming back at a lower level, because if you believe what you're hearing about the level of salaries, it may not be exactly like they would probably, the Fury would not be able to bring their roster with them to Canadian Premier League.
And the
why would you expect them to?
Yeah, and the arguments that I've seen is that Ottawa's earned their roster. They've played for this spot and the attention that they've got, and they want to be able to keep as much of their roster as they can. And I'm okay with that. It is still the Wild West in terms of second division soccer in North America. We're at the frontier of it. We don't know what's going to happen. And so I have no problem with teams being cautious about it, or teams being completely against the whole idea and wanting to keep what they've already got. Why would you sacrifice something that you've put so much time, effort, and money into? And I think that's the thing people forget. It's just that it costs a lot of money to run a sports team. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to be like, oh, well, they have all this money. They don't. It's North America, especially in Canada. They don't have the money. So they've earned the spot. They've got the rights and promotions and et cetera that they've earned. To give all of that up just completely on a whim at a major risk is insanity. So I have no problem with them being cautious about the whole thing.
To find equilibrium is so challenging for a second division team. And I was always critical of Ottawa's decision to move out of NASL to USL, which is a slightly less ambitious standard, and to take the affiliate agreement with Montreal. But that created an equilibrium for them that Edmonton could never achieve at the level it was at when it operated in NASL. And to say that it's a self, once a team, if it is like operating well, is in that equilibrium, to say that it's a selfish decision to continue to operate rather than to completely, you know, throw it all away and reinvent yourself as a lesser club to benefit the
country, or just disappear.
Or just disappear. Some people are saints. Like, some people are dedicated enough to this vision of Canadian Premier League that they are saying they would rather see the Fury die in the Canadian Premier League than elsewhere, or die through refusing to play in the Canadian Premier League than elsewhere. I don't see that. I don't see that at all.
It's wrong-minded, and I feel like people lack the ability sometimes to, you know, it's easy to knock a club and the front office and everything like that, and I'm not a proponent of capitalism, as people might have learned over the course of this podcast, but like, at the end of the day, people are trying to run a business, and like, yeah, you have to make a business decision sometimes, and you've put all this effort, all this work into it. It's not about the feelings of the fans sometimes. As a fan, as somebody who cares deeply about it, sometimes you still have to make decisions that are based on just pragmatism. And it doesn't mean never, it just means that, like, right now, it doesn't make a ton of sense for Ottawa, and I'm very okay with that. They're not slapping fans in the face by making that decision. They're just trying to make a decision that's best for the club over the longevity. Every fan base wants their team to be world champions and wants to see them lift trophies and win games. That's not realistic. And millions of fans around the world watched their teams for years, decades, mid-table, building up through leagues, relegation, promotion. This idea that everything's just going to ascend to the top level automatically over a year is completely ludicrous, and you've got to take a wider view of the game. And this is not one of this is not a decision I feel like is in any way trying to take a knock out of the Canadian Premier League. It's just that it's a club that's already established, that's already made a bunch of decisions long before this idea was ever created. And they're trying to do what's best for the club over the long term. I'm okay with that.
Some information, I'm getting a lot of info from the @FuryFanatic Twitter account, who's a great person to follow for this sort of info. It suggests that even if they continue playing in 2019 in USL, Canadian soccer may attempt to push it again in 2020. Which, I mean, at that point, it proves there's another... there's another year. The one thing about, like, and I know I'm hard on some fans with this. I am really...
we're hard on fans, aren't we, at this
And I want to take this moment to say that, like I've always really agreed with the fan-centric vision of the Canadian Premier League. I really think it needs to happen, and I really admire the work that people have put into it. And part of that is what galls me when it's like, we're going to make the league that we want. We're not going to be, fenced in by the corporate interests. This is going to be, we're gonna take the concerns of the fans, and we're going to create a league that works for everyone. And also join our league or die. It fouls the party to me.
It doesn't. And also, like, the reality is you're still doing business. Like, once you're entering into a professional sports league, you're dancing with the devil. It's never going to be that. And, I've butted heads with people about it in MLS and USL, et cetera. And of course you want to see what's best for the game at the end of the day. But it does help to sometimes just take a step back and realize that, without a certain amount of support, a certain amount of advertising dollars, et cetera, it's not going to happen. And I think that those things can exist alongside also hashtag save the crew.
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay to have healthy skepticism about a new league and still really want it to happen and work for it to happen. You know what I mean? Like this is not the sort of like saying, oh, soccer will never work in this country. It's to say that this league has to be making the right decisions in order to prosper, and we want it to prosper. So let people join in their own steam. Don't force something that they don't want to be a part of.
Yeah, the holier-than-thou soccer fandom stuff needs to go right away. And
I heard people saying that this one issue has turned Canadian soccer Twitter as toxic as American soccer Twitter overnight.
Yeah, well, all 12 people are going to be real butthurt about it. Sorry to make you spill your beer.
We love you, all 12 of you.
We do. We rely on all 12 of you. 12 of you keep listening to this.
I'm so sorry.
But
I'm not sorry, but I am sorry.
But you know who you are. And the funny thing is, like, the really funny thing is the people that have most vehemently disagreed with on Twitter about MLS are now, like, the only people that listen to this podcast. And you can find the common ground, but like, let's be honest with each other about stuff and still aspire to more. But let's be pragmatic about it as well.
Where can the fans of soccer find you online?
Can I throw in one thing before we wrap up?
Yes.
A really great thing happened because the, San Jose Vancouver game happened, just before Labor Day. And they had a special ceremony for the survivors of the workers of the Iron Workers Memorial Bridge in Vancouver, which was a major tragedy that cost a huge number of lives. And they invited the presidents of many unions to the game. And I was excited by how open and upfront the club was about discussing union issues and celebrating what Labor Day actually means to a crowd full of people, inviting representatives, inviting survivors of who worked on the Iron Workers Memorial Bridge. And I almost started singing Billy Bragg songs, but I stopped myself. But it was great. So I hope everybody had a great Labor Day weekend, and I hope everybody remembered the reasons why. And it was great to see clubs that celebrated that. And it was not a thing I expected from my hometown club, but I was very pleasantly surprised by that.
There's a great chance that this podcast doesn't happen without the union-negotiated severance I was able to get last year when I was laid off. So thanks, unions.
Unions matter. But also...
So... They do indeed. I was almost going to let that be the sound off, and then I remember that we actually have to, like, say our names and stuff. Where can the denizens of Canada Soccer Twitter find you online to argue with you?
You can find me online at That's So MLS on Twitter, which I'm increasingly moving away from. Increasingly? I'm moving away from. And moving to Instagram, because that's where soccer fans apparently are at.
It's where Kai Kamara is.
It's where Kai Kamara is. Also, okay, you say your thing and I'm going to bring up a thing.
You can argue with me online at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor for Howler Magazine at whatahowler.com. And you can find this podcast at thatsomls.com and on iTunes.
Hooray!
Please give us a rate, review, and subscribe. Even if you hate our Canadian Premier League opinions.
Such notable figures who follow our Instagram page are Wesley Knight, former Whitecaps player.
Oh man, Wes Knight!
Wes Knight's still in there! We love Wesley Knight.
I loved watching Wes Knight.
And he has a podcast, too, that talks about sports and making your life better and stuff. So you can check that out. I don't know what it's called. I'm sorry, Wes Knight. But thank you for following us on Instagram. The really cool thing is that people who are Whitecaps stay Whitecaps and they stay in touch with the club and are super awesome to their fans. So thanks, all of you.
No doubt. In the meantime, even though this is a pretty quiet week, so a lot of people are following our advice. Don't get sent off.
Or just step up to the ball.